You're listening to
Cattails. Hi, I'm Kat, and you're listening to Cattails. Multi-platinum award-winning Right Said Fred are one of the UK's most enduring pop exports. Brothers Fred and Richard Fairbrass have a list of achievements to their credit, including number one hits in 70 countries, global sales totalling 30 million, and over 100 million plays on Spotify. The first band to reach the number one slot in the US with a debut single since the Beatles, they've played in front of the Queen, Nelson Mandela and the Bollywood Awards, and their music has been featured in over 100 films, TV shows and commercials. I'm deeply dippy about them, but they're too sexy for this cat. This is the one with Right Said Fred.
How are you doing? All right?
We're fine.
Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing not too bad, actually. It's it's been a funny old year, as they say, don't they? But it's okay.
That's putting it mildly, yes.
Oh, and you know, it's so lovely to finally be able to speak to you. I mean, I haven't seen you. We first met, I don't know whether you remember, but we first met back in March 2014. So it's a long time ago since I saw you. And I came down to Chelsea to talk about photos.
Yes, I remember very well.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember that? So, I have met you in person. I'm sorry that, with the current circumstances, we can't sit together. But never mind. We have technology, don't we? So we can
move on. We do, unfortunately. Yes.
So, I mean, obviously, 6 years ago, there's been a lot happening to you in 6 years, hasn't there, really? We'll come on to, obviously, where you are now, but fill me in with what's been going on, because at the time we were speaking, the industry was a very different place, wasn't it? And there seems to have been a bit more of a kind of resurgence for your music, a new appetite for it. Do you think that's a fair sort of summary of the last 6 years for you?
Yes, I mean, I think because of the way we broke, because nobody wanted to sign I'm Too Sexy, so it was released independently. So we've always just cracked on doing what we want to do, irrespective of whether people are listening or not. So some years are good for us, and some years are bad. And I think what's some of the stuff that's the EP we released in the summer, Tide, that did very well. And I think sometimes it just goes in waves. You know, people suddenly think, oh, what happened to them, or what are they doing? and suddenly a band will reemerge, and then they go away again. And quite often that artist, whoever it is, obviously it's us we're talking about. We were recording all the time, and sometimes we record stuff that actually probably does deserve to get ignored, and other times we record stuff that doesn't. I think, you know, bands have good years and bad years, and
we've always thought of it as a kind. If you imagine a carousel at night, whizzing round, one side there's a spotlight, and all the stars are on it, and then sometimes they're in the spotlight, and sometimes they're around the other side in the pitch black, and that's kind of what show business is like.
So that's a really good analogy, Richard. I think that's a very good sort of visual aspect of it, isn't it? And as you said there, Fred, you're actually in the background just continuing doing your stuff, aren't you? You're writing, hopefully performing when you get a chance to do it. So for you, it's almost like nothing really changes. It's just the outside perception.
It is, and also
countries come and go. So, you know, for example, last year we were very busy in Canada, Sweden, and parts of Holland, and quite often we're in Germany. And same thing will happen. You won't hear from a country for a couple of years, and suddenly you'll get loads of requests to go and do stuff. So, internationally, we've been quite busy, and we've always had a slightly fractious relationship with the UK music industry, or business, I should say. Mm. We've always, it's been a bit hot and cold, and so one minute they like us, and the next minute they hate us. And so we're fairly used to that.
Yeah, and also I think we're not very good at following patterns. You know, we tend to just write, when we write songs, we literally just write as we write. So we don't pay much attention to what we wrote before, and we don't really think about what we're going to write next. We are a bit better than that at the moment because of lockdown. We're not preoccupied with live dates, so we had more time to sit and think about how we sound and what we want and the kind of stuff we want to write. Whereas normally speaking, I'm sure this is true of lots of artists, you're so busy with live work that your eye is taken off the ball slightly when it comes to recording and writing. And so from our point of view, it feels a bit selfish to say, because the lockdown has been so t- totally ghastly for so many people. But from our point of view, just speaking purely as songwriters, it's helped us concentrate.
That's funny you should say that, because lots of musicians that I've been speaking to have said exactly the same thing. It's been, it's almost been a reprieve of, you know, the, most of the time they're constantly on the road. And so actually it's quite nice to go, do you know what, I'm actually at home. What can I do? And then your creativity comes out again, doesn't it?
It does.
It does, yes.
One of the big issues that we spoke to a lady on the morning show TV a few days ago, and she was talking about gigs coming back to life and performances and everything else. One of the things that she didn't get was that for a lot of artists, you know, people, particularly bands like, you know, AC/DC or Black Sabbath or Quo or whatever, the audience is as much a part of the show as the band on stage. It's a group tribal experience. It's not like a Barry Manilow concert or a Neil Diamond concert or anything else. It's a completely different cultural experience, and I think it's those things that are going to suffer more than anything else, because not just because of band, but because of insurance, because of the audience will be nervous about mixing with other people, and I think there's a whole load, there's a raft of problems hoops to jump through before we get anywhere near back to what we might loosely call normal.
Yeah, this is going to be the problem, isn't it? I mean, funny you should say about what that new world may look like. I mean, I was talking to Ian Anderson, Jethro Tull, the other day about this very thing, and he was saying, well, I'm going to insist on everybody wearing masks. Well, you know, okay. I mean, he was quite adamant about very, very pro mask. And he said, you know, if everybody's going to be safe, they've got to be in the audience wearing masks. I think actually you're coming at it from a different angle, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's about, you know, not complying to that kind of behaviour. What's your view in terms of a live performance? How can you make it work?
Well, I don't think it'll be down to some bands will have opinions on it. A lot of it could be driven by insurance. It'll be driven by who is involved in the event. Is it a council event? Is it sponsors? Some may insist on masks, some may not. Then we've got the whole vaccine conversation. I think there's quite a few hoops that people are going to have to jump through before we get anywhere close to things just running fairly normally. And it's going to be a personal choice. I mean, we aren't anti-mask. I just think there isn't there is absolutely no conclusive science to say whether they work or not. You can speak to Dr. Roger Hodgkin, who says, and I quote, they are useless. And then you can speak to another scientist or another doctor, and they think they're not. Mm. So I think that's going to be a personal decision. And it's going to be difficult because music's going to be caught in the middle of this, along with sport, along with lots and lots of events, not just music. It'll be stand-up comedians. It'll be, Las Vegas and Atlantic City and Reno, all these places. Anything to do with hospitality is going to be caught in the middle.
Also, how is Ian Anderson going to play the flute with a mask on?
Well, I think he wasn't going to wear one, but he was suggesting that his audience did.
He sounds like a super spreader to me. All that blowing and huffing and puffing.
It's a tricky old thing, isn't it, really? I mean, the problem is that we're not really quite sure of who to believe in this anymore, are we?
No. I think if people... the trouble is there's a lot of division going on, you know, anti-vax, pro-vax, anti-mask and pro-vax. And I think if we all just took a breath, and from my experience, most people aren't anti or pro anything. They're just a little bit cautious. And with us, you know, we're not anti-vax, we're not COVID deniers. It's just trying to get some information that seems to be consistent. My personal position, I come from a position of I just don't trust politicians. I find them a bit of a self-serving.
Really?
Yes, I know.
What evidence have you got to show for that?
Exactly. When we're told that this is safe, and I'm not saying things aren't, I'm not saying they're not safe. I'm just saying the politicians have a history of saying one thing and not always being proved to be the most reliable, consistent people. And I certainly think the scientists behind vaccines do this from the best intentions. I think it's once you get the intermediaries where the conversation seems to get a bit murky. I really hope that the vaccines are a roaring success. No side effects whatsoever, and it resolves a lot of issues for people. Yeah. That would be fantastic. But I think a degree of skepticism is not an unfair position to take.
Yeah, it's just the longer term that concerns me. That's all. It's, and also the way this vaccine may or may not interact with the myriad of drugs that different people are on, whether it's antidepressants or PrEP or, you know, cancer treatments or whatever it is, you know, whatever this vaccine has to be completely compatible with every other single medication that people are taking. And I'm a little bit cautious about that, that's all.
I mean, I think you're probably speaking for a lot of the population, because that's going through everybody's mind. You know, we've never had a drug that's been developed so quickly, have we? And it's out there. No. And yes, they say it's gone through the same rigorous process. It's just been in a shorter time scale. But there is no sort of, basis to predict the future with at the moment. And I guess that's the difficulty for everybody, isn't it?
It is. Also, there was a guy writing the other day, today, in fact, talking about, well, what's the problem? Because we've always had to have, you know, jabs for going to India or jabs for going on holiday to certain destinations, blah, blah, blah. What people don't quite get, I don't think, what they're forgetting, is the interconnectedness of everything now. So that if you have, it's on your biometric details on your passport that you've had a vaccination, then because of interconnectivity, that can be shared with your bank, it could be shared with your employer, it could be shared with absolutely anybody. And therefore, that becomes a potential limiter on the amount of freedom and the amount of privacy that you have. So I'm quite happy with my driving license, with my name on it and my face and everything else. That's absolutely cool. But the minute it has a chip, then I start to think, well, why does it have a chip? What is being shared? I just think people should be a little bit more careful. I'm not pro anti any of it. I'm just thinking we need to be careful.
It's interesting what you're saying there, because I'm wondering whether it's a bit of a sort of a generational thing, because I have the same kind of conversations when I'm talking to my marketing and PR students, when I'm, you know, I do some lecturing at Cambridge as well. And I have this conversation about the same thing. And I'm very much about, you know, putting it on the line of both sides and balance. And I say exactly what you've just said there in terms of, well, have you thought about how people, your data is being captured? Have you thought about how it's being used? And interestingly, you know, they're obviously younger than I am, because I've been in the industry a lot longer, and they haven't thought about it. Do you think it's because they're just younger and they've grown up in this world with it already there?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I think we've all thought that, you know, the freedoms that we have and the liberties that we have and the privacy that we have is kind of God-given in some kind of bizarre way, and that we don't have to fight for it. And I think what's become clear to me is that these things are quite fragile, and they can be undermined very easily by people that we don't even elect, that we don't even see or don't even know. So I think, and I think youngsters have grown up. You know, I remember talking to our father. We're both of the age where our father was in the Second World War, and if he was told today that he couldn't go into his pub and smoke his pipe, or he couldn't go into his pub without them taking his temperature, or whatever it is, or giving his name and number, he wouldn't believe it. It's this salami slicing of normality, which I think we have to be very, very, very astute on. And, you know, I'm always surprised. We've had one interview today cancelled because of our position on this. And it's weird, because the right to dissent and the right to question is fundamental to the way we live. But it's very sad that we're getting to a point where mere dissent and questioning is in and of itself becoming an issue.
So we were asked today about, you know, it's weird that we've done this song, We're All Criminals. And our position is, well, we think it's weird that other artists haven't.
Yes.
That's what I think is weird. I think it's very strange that Ed Sheeran hasn't done a song about what's going on. He is a singer-songwriter. That's his principal position. It would be to reflect the world around him. And I think it's very strange that lots of our, I mean, some artists have, Ian Brown, Robbie Williams, Van Morrison, ourselves, have. Where's just really solid? Our position is, well, pop music should quite often reflect the world around you. And that's what I'm Too Sexy was a reflection of our time in New York in 1987. It was about the rise of the supermodel and the hedonism we saw. And that's what I'm Too Sexy was about. And so we find it a bit odd that we're suddenly in the spotlight, having the fingers pointed at us, for writing about a situation that we're all living in.
Well, it's a little bit like, you know, you don't think of Picasso as being a protest, angry young man who's, you know, who's got this one particular view of the entire world just because he painted Guernica. He painted Guernica, he constructed Guernica because that's how he felt about that particular issue, that particular moment in Spanish history. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's... That sums him up completely, in the same way that We're All Criminals doesn't sum up us up completely, and nor does Sexy. That's all it is. Yeah. It's we're rounded like everybody else in the country. We're rounded people. We have good days, bad days, cynical days, loving days. You know.
Yeah.
Just, you know what I mean? It's normal.
I do, really. And I think what you're describing there for me, you know, sitting here with a journalistic hat on, you know, in terms of being able to broadcast messages and people's stories, it seems odd to me that somebody would cancel an interview with you because they don't necessarily agree with your opinion. Surely the role of journalism, the role of broadcasting, the role of everybody in society is to really hold a mirror up to what's happening, yes. and be free to say what they think without fear of retribution. And I'm just wondering why do musicians end up getting the sort of like the brunt end of it, really? Why should you be criticised for saying something that other people are free to say?
I think a lot of musicians, I think because pop music is in the way pop music's been sold in the last 20 years, A lot of it's been sold through television on talent shows. It's incredibly corporate. It's very bands tend to stay in their lane, and it's a bit mealy mouthed compared to how it was in the 90s, the 80s, and the 70s, and the 60s. And I think people aren't used to musicians having an opinion. I think particularly from our position, because we've got two or three songs that dominate our careers. People think if you write a song like "I'm Too Sexy or Deeply Dippy," you must be a moron, and you obviously don't have any brain cells. So, what we're noticing is that people who question it have clearly never listened to any album we've ever done, because us commenting on stuff is not that rare, really. We did it on almost every album with one song or another. Mm. You know, it's not that peculiar.
And we've recently had a song blocked. We did a co-write. I'm not certain anything about it, but we co-wrote a song with two other guys, two American guys, and they have blocked the song because they disagree with our position on masks.
And we actually don't have a position.
And we don't have a position on masks.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's sort of like the outside perception again, isn't it? But yes, I've seen quite a lot of backlash for you on social media as well, all about this very subject. And it's been really interesting how upset people have got with you on something you actually haven't said so far as I can see.
We were aware that it would probably cause problems. But to be absolutely honest with you, we would have felt really... I would have felt ashamed if we hadn't said something, because it's one of the biggest cultural shifts that's happening in this country. That's happened, probably since we cut Charles I's head off. You know, it's a massive, massive thing that's going on in this country. We have massive debts. We have all sorts of collateral damage in terms of illness as a consequence of the lockdown. We have the potential of a vaccine that although the government won't make it mandatory, commercial interests may well do so. These are big issues, and I think it would have been remiss of us not to at least say something and comment on it. And We're All Criminals, it's just that. It's a comment. It's not a...
I don't know how you could be an artist and put something out and not address it.
And not address it, no.
You know, exactly. When I won't mention names, but there's a couple of albums come out recently by, you know, the usual, not usual suspect, but well-known, very, very sort of pop-driven artists. And the fact that they haven't even given it a nod just says to me, well, why wouldn't you? You're living in this world. And, or maybe they're so wealthy and successful, they don't live in that world. I don't know.
I think that goes almost back to what I was saying there about the different generations, and thinking that perhaps those artists that you're talking about there are talking to that younger generation who probably don't want to hear it, maybe. I'm just putting it out there. Maybe they do. I don't know. But, you know, perhaps that's the problem.
Well, some people don't, it's a little bit like when you tell, if you imply to somebody who votes regularly on a TV talent show that the votes don't really count, that in some cases the winner is already decided, you know, in auditions before they're even filmed. and you imply to them that their phone call is, it's sort of like a waste of time, they get very angry. They don't want to know. They don't really want to face the prospect that they perhaps they've been duped, or at least they've had their time wasted. And I think there's an element of that in this. I think there's an element of people feeling angry if there's even the remotest chance that they've been had, or that stats have been skewed to look worse than they are, or you know, I think there's that. People are very defensive about their position. So I'm not surprised some people got angry, but again, I think it would have been remiss of us not to say something. And I repeat the thing with regards to the track, it is not a protest song. I really don't like protest songs much. But for instance, Buffalo Springfield, years ago, that was a protest song, yeah. And it was quite expected. It was something back in the day that you expected, sort of a contemporary writers to write about things that were happening around them. So it is an unusual situation we're in the UK, or in the West now, where nuance and the right to dissent has become a bit of a problem. Hi, we're Matt and Fred.
And you are listening to Cat Tales.
Mm-hmm. So when you sat down to actually think about a new song then, so we've got We're All Criminals is obviously the end product there, but did you start with the fact that, you know, we've got to say something about this, or did you start with the let's write a good song and see what comes out of it?
We're All Criminals is a rework. We had it was a song we wrote about mass surveillance a few years ago. Then during the first lockdown, we were just playing around with some ideas. And we've always liked the song, but we thought it could do with a rewrite. So we rewrote the chorus, rewrote some lyrics, and we're just playing. We in the studio, we tend to have four or five ideas bouncing around, and we'll go from one to the other and see which works. And Criminals came together in a way that we really liked. We liked the deeply dippy sort of chuggy guitar in the verses, and we liked the big sing along chorus. So the song always. If we hadn't liked the song, if the song just didn't work out, then we wouldn't have done it. No. So it's not driven by the message. It's driven by the song, and then the message comes along afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
And it's interesting that it's a rework of something that you did a little while back, but actually that was the basis of, almost, it sounds to me like that's the start of the problem that we're now seeing now, maybe. You know, it's because it hasn't gone away, has it? Because you're actually able to talk about it again.
Yeah. Also, I think I've said this before. I think people think I'm a bit of a lunatic, but I think this started years and years ago. I think this gradual, rather sort of lazy attitude we've got to the level that the state can interfere in your personal life happened. If you want to make the we had a bit of a set to with a guy the other day on radio about seatbelts. And my feeling about seatbelts is they're a good idea and everybody should wear them, but I still think it should be a matter of choice. I still think the crash helmet should be a matter of choice. I still think smoking should be a matter of choice. So I'm not against these things. I think smoking in a restaurant is a bit tedious. I don't like to smell cigarette smoke when I'm in a restaurant, but if I owned a restaurant and I wanted to make it a smoking restaurant, I think that should be my decision. And if I go out of business, that is my problem. So I think this has happened quite incrementally over many, many years, and the nation has become slightly infantilized, I think, to the point where you even have, you know, images of feet in front of the ATM, so you know how to stand. You know, it's arrows pointing in car parks, so you know which way to walk. It's all rather ridiculous, I think. I've been walking around under my own steam for 67 years, and I can quite easily negotiate a bank without following the arrows, you know?
It's a bit like when you go into a chemist, you buy some paracetamol. Are you on any other medication? What else are you doing? And have you taken this before? And and it's like, well, hang on, I'm allowed to vote. I'm allowed to raise a family. I've got a TV and a car. I can do all those things. And so this is what's going on here. And it's a bit of an odd place we've got into. So what concerns me, and I know people think a bit nuts for saying this, but I watched a documentary about a guy in China, and he basically was jaywalking. And in China, they have social credit scores. So his jaywalking was a mark against him. The people at work complained that his social credit scores were low. So he got sacked. So he lost his job, lost his flat. He then got moved to a city which is sort of houses naughty people, if you want to, for that want of a better expression. So what was weird is how this one little event, which was jaywalking, and they've got the footage of him doing it, jaywalking, he then loses his job, place, and then ends up having to move cities. What concerns me is the connectivity of all this. Okay. So you start off with just one thing. Yeah, you just go in. Yeah, yes, I don't take any medication, I'm fine. And then the next thing, can you scan your QR code? And then suddenly, you know, will your bank have your health details? Will your doctor have your financial details? Will your insurance company have your health details, your financial details, and your personal medication? Do you know what I mean? If the whole thing starts to connect, you could, which is apparently what is happening in China, is they can just turn you off. So with one switch, your credit card stops working, your driving license stops working, your loans are all frozen. Is that going to happen over here? Are we heading towards that? And I'm not saying we are. I just think not thinking about these things strikes me as a bit naive.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, again, it's about that questioning, isn't it? It's about saying, just accept, rather than just accepting, you know, should we be questioning more? And actually, there's nothing wrong in questioning things. It's just what the result of that's going to be, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine. I won't say who she works for, but she works for a very large bank in Europe. And she heads up this department, which is called the Behavioral Data Department. And their whole department is based on finding out everything about people, so they can target them with loans, so they can target them with mortgages or whatever, and they sell the data as predictive data, which is becoming one of the most valuable things in the world now. Which is how are you going to spend your money? Where are you going to spend it? Who are you going to spend it with? What are you going to spend it on? But that also will tie in what they're trying to find out. What they want to do is have your health record. They want to know where you go at the weekend. Do you go to the gym? Do you go to the pub? How will that affect your?
Is your blood sugar high?
Yeah,
Low,
yeah. I mean, no. So it was when I'm talking to her, and she works in this department, but she's personally quite concerned about the privacy aspect of it. But she said the people she's working for don't have the same concerns. So that's quite an interesting position, I think.
Well, one of the things, just very, very quickly, they were talking to a lot of the heads of big tech companies in America on a documentary recently. You know, the top CEOs in Twitter and Facebook and whatever. And these people do not let their own children access these sites.
That's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. That's quite interesting.
That's called the dilemma, isn't it? Social dilemma?
I don't know what it's called. It was a documentary. Yeah, it was. But that's so. It's interesting that the people who provide these services are aware of their addictive qualities nature. And the nature, and as a consequence, will not let their own children access them. So all I'm saying is let's just keep our weather eye open and not automatically trust the so-called experts, because some of them are up to their neck in corporate funding and have a particular view because they're paid to have a particular view. I'm just in favour of people thinking for themselves. That's all it is. I don't want to wear a mask. It's absolutely fine. But at least know why you're wearing it. Make sure it's the right mask. Make sure you know how to fit it. You know, it's take responsibility for yourself, really. Don't expect Boris to do it for you.
Well, I think that's it, isn't it? I mean, are we turning into a nanny state? And, the whole concept of this data mining is really interesting, because if we, a bit of a flashback to the start of loyalty cards with the supermarkets. Absolutely. Actually, that was all about seeing about people's shopping habits, having a look at what they buy so they can then target them. And so that has been going on a long time, hasn't it? In a very subtle kind of way that people probably haven't been aware. And they think it's about giving them rewards. Well, actually, hasn't been.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I mean, also, will we get to the point where you turn up at the till and you've got your alcohol and everything, and they put your QR code in or whatever? They said, "Well, you're not allowed to buy that because you had it last night, or your BMI is a bit high, your sugar levels are a bit high. Sorry, you're denied that product." Is that a bit paranoid, or will that happen? I actually don't know.
I wonder. And you've also got the concept of actually ourselves being chipped. I mean, this is something that's happened. I think it's China. I could be wrong. I might be misquoting here, but they've actually had a situation where in certain companies they've put a microchip within them so they could swipe themselves in and out of the building. You know, like you have with a card. You know, just imagine if that was to happen here. I mean, would people accept it?
Well, I think the people would accept it when they don't understand what that information can do. There's a guy writing the Times today, and he said, if I have a vaccination passport, I'm fine with that because other countries will demand it, blah, blah. What he doesn't understand is the interconnectivity of that. And it's the same with these passes you're talking about. Once you're chipped, do you have, for instance, just cutting across, interrupting myself, I've got a chip on my passport, okay, and my shoulder. But I've got a chip on my passport. And I wrote to the passport office and I said, I'd like to know what's on this chip. So they then wrote back to me and said, well, send it in if you're that concerned. All that's on the chip is what's on the front, the stiff page, your photo and your address and everything else. So I said, no, I want to send it to somebody independent. And they said, no, you can't do that. The only option you've got is to send it back to us and we can tell you.
That's not quite the same thing, is it?
quite what I wanted. So all I'm saying is that people, maybe it's in the absence of faith. You know, back in the old days, if somebody was ill, it was God's fault, and it was to do with the universe, and it was to do with something, I don't know. And the state, we didn't expect the state to make us healthy. We didn't expect the state to make us well and to keep us well and to keep us safe. And as faith has diminished, perhaps we're putting too much reliance on man-made structures which will never, ever, ever serve the purpose. That maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, that, like, let's say the health service was all born out of the end of the Second World War, wasn't it? And yeah. Looking after the population. You know, perhaps that's where it all started.
Well, exactly. I remember there was a story of a lady when the National Health first started. She was going to her doctor and getting bucket loads of cotton wool. And after a while, the doctor said to her, "What are you doing with all this cotton wool?" And she explained that she was making little stuffed toys and selling them.
Wow.
So what I'm saying is people forgot what it was for. And people now look at the NHS and expect, when my partner had cancer, I was furious with the people, very unfair, I was furious with them because they couldn't do anything. God didn't come into it, nothing came into it, other than the fact, why can't you make him better? And I was furious with them because I got into that mindset where you expected the NHS or the doctors to do everything and get everything right, and they can't. And it's the same with this COVID-19 thing. You know, we expect the government and the NHS to put it right, and maybe they just can't. But we're living in an age when we insist that they do, and in their panic and their confusion, they continue to try and do what they think is right. But in the meantime, you know, ruin the economy and create all sorts of other conditions that we don't really want to talk about, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things that is it possible to get it right? As you say there's no winners, really. You can't win this, can you?
No. The idea of eradicating it, and Matt Hancock says we'll be through this next spring. I think it's...
Has a virus ever been eradicated? I know TB was eradicated from this country for a while, but I think 1.5 million died of it 2018-19, not in this country, I mean worldwide. So surely you just control it, you don't eradicate it, do you?
Well, that's right. No. I think actually there's only one thing that has ever been eradicated to my knowledge, and that's been smallpox. That might be the only one that has actually, you know, been eradicated from the world, but I think it's also held somewhere within the World Health Organization. I'm sounding like I know what I'm talking about here, but I'm sure, have I read it somewhere? Am I making this up? I'm sure I've read that somewhere.
Yeah, there was also a lot of, at the beginning of this, when there was all the clapping for the NHS thing, and I remember when my partner, Stuart, he was HIV positive for about 27 of the 28 years we were together, and he was treated at the Thomas Macaulay ward in Chelsea, Westminster. At that time, Elton John was subsidising the kitchen there, so the food was really, really good. The treatment there he got was overall really, 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 really good. And back in the early days of HIV, doctors, nobody really knew how it was transmitted. But those doctors and nurses still treated the patients there with the same care and concern that doctors always have. So I always felt that it was slightly, if I'd been a doctor in retirement now, looking back on my period treating HIV patients in the early 80s, late 70s, and when I didn't get any applause from anybody or any thanks, I'd find it a little bit galling to see the general kind of the genuflection to the NHS today, this unquestioning adulation. I think it's a bit strange when the people within the NHS have been doing this probably since the 40s.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can name all sorts of things like Ebola. That's another one that comes to mind when you were talking there, that is still a big issue, which is very contagious. And actually, you know, it's you're putting your lives at risk. Anybody who's dealing with the patient, aren't they? And they always have been.
Absolutely. These are very, very brave people. Absolutely. One doctor made the point about COVID-19. He said, "This is so deadly, you have to have a test to know if you've got it."
Well, I was just going to round us all off here by asking, what's next then? So we're All Criminals. Is that going to be part of a bigger, you know, release?
Yes, We're All Criminals is the first single off an EP. The EP cut is released end of Jan, early Feb. That's got two other tracks on it. And we're being asked about doing an album. We might sort of bundle all the EPs together, add some tracks and do an album towards middle 20 or end of next year. It depends on It depends what goes on, really. We've been offered a book deal, so we're talking to that publisher at the moment. And then in the middle of all that, our show's going to happen.
Wow.
I don't
know. Yeah. In amongst all this, there's so much going on. That's absolutely brilliant. Oh, do you know, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you both. It really has. Thank you so much for your time. I'm so pleased I've been able to catch up at last.
And, it's a pleasure.
You know, we must do this again when you get your EP out next year.
And yes,
see how the world has changed.
Yes.
Or not.
Fantastic. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Thank you very much.
See you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Cattails. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattails.co.uk.